Welcome to the Altus Group podcast series. William Cole is the senior manager in Altus Group's transaction tax service line. And before joining Altus Group, Bill spent over a decade with the Maryland Comptroller's Office managing business tax audits for the state. With his time on both sides of the audit table, Bill brings a unique perspective to audit defenses and will be sharing more insights into top sales and use tax strategies for the Mid-Atlantic region. And Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. And as you know, we've been talking about a lot of hot button topics in our sales and use tax audit series. And as we mentioned here in the intro, you are going to be discussing current audit issues in the Mid-Atlantic region. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Absolutely. So with many states in the Mid-Atlantic region posting budgetary deficits, their audit efforts have been as active as ever. I mean, not only are the Mid-Atlantic states looking to expand their sales and use tax collections, of course, via new laws, but they're also beefing up their audit efforts to maximize collections by aggressively interpreting and enforcing existing laws. We'll talk today about recent audit actions in several states and those states' efforts not only to expand what's taxable under existing law, but to further limit existing sales and use tax exemption, as well as we'll talk about who is subject to the state's reach and how they're expanding that.
Perfect. That sounds great, Bill. So speaking of the states, what trends are you seeing from the states?
Well, first off, evolving technology. It's always been a factor in this industry and in tax compliance. It changes the marketplace on a regular and ongoing basis. Consumer behavior, state revenues, they all change frequently. And state sales and use tax laws have always lagged behind these changes. What used to be a traditional purchase of tangible personal property from a brick-and-mortar store is increasingly becoming a stream of data over the internet. Software, CDs, DVDs, music, books, and the list goes on. All of the media that historically was purchased in stores like Best Buy, Barnes & Noble, and Blockbuster, if anyone remembers that name, and taxed at the point of sale is now being downloaded directly to our computers and TVs. Consequently, state sales and use tax revenues are shrinking as traditional tangible personal property sales are being replaced with sales of this intangible media, contributing to budgetary shortfalls within these various state agencies. How state laws react to this changing economic landscape varies not only across the country, but obviously also within the Mid-Atlantic region. Recently, for example, Pennsylvania reissued guidance on its treatment of electronically delivered software to remind the public that the Commonwealth considers purchases of such products to be taxable. Now, this wasn't new law here. It was just the Commonwealth issuing a reminder of existing policy, similar to guidance they issued earlier to remind out-of-state retailers of the nexus-creating implications of agents within the state's borders. Whether we're talking about downloaded software, software as a service, or other software applications accessible online, Pennsylvania taxes the purchases of such products, whether as one-time purchases or licenses for ongoing use. At the same time, Pennsylvania has been increasing its scrutiny of software and service contracts to apply this software taxation concept as widely as possible. Recent audit actions have included taxation of mobile tracking software for mobile technicians, and multi-user human resources applications that may be accessed by company personnel anywhere in the U.S. And we're talking about basic HR software, enabling employees to do simple tasks like entering their time and expenses from home offices, remote job sites, and even from their cars. Both of these issues highlight an important point. Like all other states, Pennsylvania is only legally authorized to tax transactions and to tax uses of software, in particular, within their own borders. Documenting and proving where these users are located is the critical part. It may be as simple as headcounts. A lot of times the audit division will accept that where people are physically located is a reasonable indicator of their usage of the software. Sometimes you may have to go further to actually track tangible usage, meaning maybe megabytes of data used. But it's important to recognize the burden rests on the user. It's not on the state. Pennsylvania tax, like any other state's tax, should only be paid for the proportionate use within its own borders.
Interesting. Great insights there, Bill. So is this issue of digital media and electronic data being addressed throughout the Mid-Atlantic region then?
Well, in varying forms. For example, District of Columbia has recently renewed its scrutiny of data processing services under sales and use tax audits. The district has long taxed data processing services, and the Office of Tax and Revenue has frequently sought to expand the scope of services and transactions that it taxes under this law. Recently, this has seen a renewed focus on services like accounting and legal services, which utilize data systems to process client information. These service providers, along with other companies like payroll companies and various information service providers, have seen increased audit activity in recent years. In fact, we recently had a case where the taxpayer was a consumer of consulting services related to its implementation of a packaged software system. So we're basically talking about just the management and implementation of the software. The third-party vendor was providing that project management. It was providing its own subject matter expertise and technical support services within the district. Now, in many jurisdictions, this would not be taxable, but under D.C. law and under D.C.'s interpretation of the law, it falls under the taxability of data processing services. Knowing that data processing services themselves are taxable in the district, our taxpayer was concerned whether these ancillary consulting services would fall under the definition of the taxable data processing service. The taxpayer did some research on their own, couldn't come up with a definitive conclusion. There simply wasn't enough published information that was clear and on point from the Office of Tax and Revenue. After doing our research and leveraging some contacts we have in the district, we were able to provide clarity to the situation and get the correct answer for this taxpayer. But this is just one of many examples of even when a taxpayer tries to do the right thing, they can still get dinged on audit. Because if they hadn't reached out and gained enough information from us, this easily could have been an issue under any future DC audit. That's why it's best to bring in an expert on the front end of things like this. Our client paid us some money in fees, but the amount was far less than what could have been assessed in an audit context that would include both interest and penalties on top of the tax due. And that's just one example. I mean, many users of software as a service and other online software applications, regardless of the industries in which they operate, are likewise seeing increased scrutiny of contracts and license agreements for such offerings. At this point, really, in the OTR's eyes, it seems that if any data is entered, maintained, modified, or even reviewed via a software application, it'll be taxed as a data processing service. It's a significant expansion of their historical interpretation.
Wow. So, you know, you spoke of recent state efforts to limit existing sales and tax and use tax exemptions. Can you expand a little bit more on that?
Well, I'll give you two particular ones, two that we like to refer to as the classics, government contractors and research and development companies. They've both seen increased scrutiny recently under audits and refund claims. Throughout the Mid-Atlantic, as well as across the country, states have enacted sales and use tax exemptions for companies that provide property and services to various governmental agencies, as well as those that perform scientific and research development activities. However, as with all exemptions, there are boundaries that define what qualifies for the exemption. The scope of the exemption can be defined by how property or services are used, where they're used, or whether they're used exclusively in the exempt activity or just simply intermittently without any percentage requirement. Virginia, as an example, adheres to their true object of the contract approach when auditing government contractors, particularly defense contractors. If the true object of the contract is to resell property to the federal government, Virginia law will exempt the contractor's purchase of materials acquired for fulfillment of that contract. Now, in order to determine the true object of a contract, a state auditor has to review the contract and may have to get down to a very detailed level. Here's where the problem comes in. Defense contractors routinely operate under classified federal contracts, Currently, the Commonwealth of Virginia has no staff in their audit division with the clearances necessary to review these classified documents. Matter of fact, we know of an instance very recently where a contractor erroneously paid Virginia sales tax on such purchases and is now at a stalemate with the Commonwealth in regards to a refund claim they submitted to recover these overpaid taxes. The interesting thing about this is that there's a letter ruling published by the Commonwealth where an audit assessment was abated because the auditor assessed tax on contracts for which the auditor didn't have the proper clearance in order to review them. In that case, taxpayer would have shown the contracts to the auditor had the auditor had that clearance, but was legally barred from doing so under federal law. The commissioner reversed the Commonwealth's assessment on appeal, citing fairness as the reason. Now, if the state were truly fair, why wouldn't they honor this particular taxpayer's refund request? The standard of proof is no different, whether we're talking about an audit or a refund claim. So to be fair, the Commonwealth should grant this taxpayer's refund. If the Department of Revenue gets an auditor with proper credentials within the next 3 years, they can always come back and audit the refund claim. These types of hardball tactics cost taxpayers time and money. So exercising vigilance and reaching out for assistance up front at the time of a transaction can save lots of headaches later. Now let's go just across the Potomac for a second, and let's take a look at something that's happened in Maryland recently. The state has continued to be aggressive under audit, and one of their most aggressive approaches recently has been targeting the hundreds of companies engaged in scientific research and development activities within the state. Now, state law provides for a broad sales and use tax exemption for companies engaged in R&D activities, and that law has been in place for many years. The law is so broad that virtually any tangible personal property used in research and development activity is exempt from the tax. Moreover, the law does not require that the property be used exclusively or even predominantly in R&D activities. Only that it be used in R&D with no percentage of use requirement. However, recent audits have seen the state comptroller's office seek to impose predominant usage tests to items such as software and hardware systems that serve multiple functional areas, including R&D, under long-standing interpretations by the comptroller's office. Such systems qualify for exemption, regardless of their relative percentage of use. We've been successful in getting the comptroller's office to back down when challenged on their application of the law, thankfully producing some nice refunds for taxpayers. But it's an ongoing challenge. In another instance, in a tried and true audit tactic, we've seen Maryland auditors continue in their attempts to stretch language in taxing statutes to cover activities that were never meant to be taxed. Again, in Maryland, as an example, the cleaning of commercial buildings and detective services are taxable services under the law. We're aware of a case in particular where the auditor attempted to characterize a temporary labor provider as a taxable janitorial service because the laborers it provided were assigned to clean commercial buildings by the company procuring the labor services. We've also seen the state attempt to tax otherwise exempt professional engineering services as a taxable detective service because the company was involved in performing investigations regarding structural damage to buildings, essentially forensic engineering. Without effective representation, companies that find themselves the victim of these hardball tactics may wind up paying assessments that never should have been asserted in the first place. And there are dozens of other audit issues that pop up on a regular basis throughout the Mid-Atlantic region and, of course, across the country. Whether it's real property contractors and ballot exemption certificates, employee purchase card controls, resellers with document retention issues, or a myriad of other issues. With long-term budget deficits, the states will continue to take the most aggressive positions to close the budgetary gaps using audit assessments.
Obviously, we've been able to touch on just a few of these issues today. For more information on these topics or to explore the range of services provided by Altus Group's transaction tax team, please feel free to visit our website at www.altusgroup.com.
Perfect. And that's a wrap for our podcast interview with William Cole, Senior Manager in Altus Group's Transaction Tax Services line. And as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, Bill spent over a decade with the Maryland Comptroller's Office managing business tax audits for the state, and he's basically worked on both sides of the audit table. And Bill was kind enough to share his unique perspective on what's going on in terms of sales and use tax strategies in the Mid-Atlantic region. And Bill, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.